Natural Solutions with Dr. J, your source for time-tested and cutting-edge natural medicine approaches to optimize your health, with your host, Dr. J. Sordian.
Okay, so I'm fortunate to be here today with Carrie Moon, and Carrie has been working in the healthcare assisted living memory care field for many years. So maybe you could just start out by telling us a little bit about your background and what brings you to this spot today.
Well, thank you, Jay. My background, like many people in the field, I was always I really got what elders bring to us in terms of history and story and wisdom. But I didn't choose it as an occupation until I had been doing corporate training and development for a while. So I did group dynamics and conflict resolution. Also as an independent and aligning myself with other companies who do that, market themselves to organizations. I have a degree in a master's in human relations with a focus on group dynamics. But I started sort of mid-career deciding, you know, what's an application that might have more meaning for me. So I started marketing myself as a conflict resolution specialist, but sort of in the mix, I became acquainted with CEO of a local assisted living company, and I really loved the philosophy, and I ended up going to work for him as his assistant and learning about the business and that philosophy of really personalized, individualized care, particularly with elders who have dementia, and really trying to enhance quality of life and care in the industry for people with dementia.
And so was that like a new approach at the time?
Or? This company definitely sought to innovate. And I worked with them for several years in different capacities, but definitely looking for ways to innovate. Less drugs, more quality interaction, really trying to understand what was going on inside that person, that if you could access it would give them connection and joy and fulfillment. Really looking at how many people with memory loss, really what they have is this moment right now. So how to make as many of those right now moments absolute highest quality possible connection, like I said, and some way of really accessing that happiness, that ability to really appreciate music and art and human touch.
Well, that sounds great. So you were in particular organizations that were a formal organization for, I mean, you don't have to say where it was. If you don't. And that was for a number of years?
For a number of years. And for my last organization, we developed the most active program in the state of California for people living in assisted living.
It was called the most active?
It was, yeah, statistically the most active
program in the state
of California. We really sought to innovate how to address especially problematic behaviors instead of just labeling someone aggressive or some of the other labels that many assisted living will not take, and board of care. They will either ask someone to leave because of their behaviors or they won't accept them. So you end up with families who have loved ones who cannot find a place for them because of this label, when really if you took the time to really understand what was at the root of the agitation, not just over medicate either, but really what's at the root of the agitation and respond to whatever that need is that's being communicated.
So us regular folk are people who hopefully aren't having rapid decline of memory or cognitive abilities. We all get agitated at times and all, but hopefully that will be assuaged in some fashion, or we can communicate what's going on, or someone can come to us and resolve it. But in the situation of assisted living and all, individuals who have some cognitive decline or memory issues, that particular behavior, they might get caught in it because, as you were saying, because of communicate, perhaps there's something's going on and maybe they lost ability to communicate. Maybe it was a stroke or something. Now, there's some examples that you have of that where, maybe describe it to me. We were talking earlier about some cases. the kind of things that can come up that a family might actually hire you because this is going on and it's become a problem. And, mm-hmm. and so they go, oh, well, we need to hire someone to help us understand how to bridge this communication issue.
So, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And often the family, just knowing the person, is a big source of information about from the past what this person may have enjoyed that now because of the environment they're in, they don't have access to, whether that's a certain type of music or the light shining in a certain way, wanting to sit in sunlight or the smell of flowers or the feeling of dirt in their hands. Sometimes the family can inform that. And sometimes the added training and in caring for people with different types of memory loss
that you've had,
that I've had, and that many of my colleagues have had, and also just intuition, just really sitting with someone and looking for signs and just intuiting things that might be worth trying to see if they respond to it, and really taking the time to do that. So many facilities, obviously, time is a factor, and there is training that happens, but sometimes there's something that just can't be taught if the staff doesn't really have time and make time to really be present with the person, to really try to tune into what their needs are, what they're saying. So I was given an example of a woman who had strokes, who her cognition level is actually pretty high. It's aphasia, so she can't.
And so aphasia again is not being able to speak.
Get
things
words,
out.
Or it comes out the wrong words. So. Really just taking that extra moment, because what happens is when she's unable to communicate and people are trying to rush her through the process or just making assumptions or not taking the time, she gets frustrated, and then there are some behaviors around that, pushing or slamming her walker. And what will often happen is people will then get labeled aggressive, oh, they're agitated, and either they'll be medicated or as extreme as a facility might ask someone to leave for those behaviors.
So, and that's not an uncommon thing, that if there's
uncommon.
Too much aggression or something, then it's like, is that's maybe perhaps in the rules or the policy of a facility, that when you first come in, if there are certain grounds by which, they can say, well, we can't have you here anymore, or something like that too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in some places, every facility requires a report, a 602 physician's report, and if that report says this person has aggressive behaviors, a lot of places will just say no. And a lot of times...
A 602 report?
Physician's report.
Oh, it's called the 602 form or something? Or?
It is, and so every assisted living or board and care would have that document, and it might have these kind of labels on it.
I see. That's in like the medical record of the person.
It is. So often I'm advocating, when I'm trying to help someone find a placement and I'm being told that person has an aggressive behavior, I can backtrack and see where did they get assigned that label. Very often it was at the hospital. Okay, so a person's been taken into a new environment. They've obviously got something going on, or they wouldn't be there in the first place. The hospital can't afford to have them walk away, so they do different things to have that person stay in bed. And obviously people have resistance to just being shoved into a bed and not really getting an opportunity to try to communicate what's going on for them and what their needs are. Sometimes they'll assign them a one-on-one staff, but it's not like having fully trained people to really understand what might be going on and help that person adjust to the situation in a way that they're not becoming aggressive, quotes. So sometimes when you backtrack before the hospital, that person has never had those type of behaviors. And then you can go to the folks who are looking at whether they're going to admit that person or not and make a case. But you kind of have to have someone who knows what's going on there and that you can advocate for that and the right people to talk to try to get your person admitted. Now, some people have been kicked out of three or four different assisted livings, and some of them have made legitimate efforts to try to understand what's driving some of those behaviors. And sometimes it is a mystery sometimes. Or you can work with a person. We often use music. We'll create playlists of music that are important to that person. Some people, I've seen residents that what they liked was just brightly colored objects, and that was enough to soothe them, or textures, something that they can manipulate with their hands, or acupressure points in the hands, and sometimes that's soothing. And you might be able to eliminate some of those behaviors, you know, 95%, but then there's that 5% that, especially if it's against another resident, sometimes that person still has to leave. So it's not like you can always solve every problem all the time through interventions like that, through thoughtful intervention, engagement, but the majority of the time you can. Very often, most often, it's there's a pain that they're not able to communicate.
So it's a physical pain or
sometimes
emotional
just a physical
or
pain, and they can't
something
say,
else. Uh-huh.
Yes. So very often, you just start with something like extra strength Tylenol. It could be that simple. Just, there may just be something, you know, something that is easily treatable. But instead, a lot of times people are given these antipsychotic drugs and other types of drugs before something as simple as that has been tried. Something as simple as changing the environment. Maybe they're overstimulated. Maybe it's too noisy. Maybe they're a person you learn from the family that always enjoyed quiet time to themselves. Well, many places, because they don't want people on their own or have the staff to have someone one-on-one with that person or watching a smaller group, the idea is to have them all in one big room. And that can be very overstimulating. And
for certain people, and is that more like people who are introverts or something? Maybe they would be introverted or something.
Maybe someone's always been an introvert, yes. Right. Or maybe someone's become an introvert as their thought processes have slowed down. Mm. Because when you can't process information as quickly and suddenly you've got a room full of people talking and doing different things, it's just too much. It's just information overload. Mm. On the other hand, you might have someone who's always been an extrovert who and been a very busy person in their life, and they're actually just really bored that whatever is going on is not enough for them. So again, it's very personal, and it really ideally you're working with the family and the trained professionals together to try to create a picture and share ideas about what sort of interventions to try to create quality of life for a person regardless of their level of memory loss.
So now you have a website.
I do have a website.
And what is the website?
It's carriemooncarestrategies.com.
All right.
It's a pretty simple website, but people are welcome to email if they're having any specific situation. I'm happy to try to address any concerns. And I also am very happy to do a free consult if people want to share what's going on. And I hopefully offer some information that's valuable then, and also maybe offer some value for an ongoing working relationship. You might see that there's some way that I could continue to be in the picture and advise people in the process. Sometimes I just help someone connect to either in-home care or to an assisted living or a board and care, and just knowing that out of the hundreds in our area, you know, which ones have the best reputation for taking, you know, care of the body, mind, emotional, all levels of a person, the holistic approach, with different budgets and different people who specialize in different conditions, to help really find them a place that's really good so that the family members can show up and be the family and not have to always be advocating for the quality of care. Because people have been out there doing this already, trying to advocate to really get the care that their parents need, already understand some of the frustrations that we run across as we try to put that, that plan together.
So a family may have a variety of different reasons why they would call you up. And no, you are here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
I am.
And so do you ever work with people like anywhere else around the country?
I absolutely do, by phone or by Skype.
Oh, all right.
Sometimes some of the variables change, but a lot of times it's the same kind of scenario. So it's just letting people know, here are some things you might be able to expect in terms of the different things that might happen with the condition, the different types of resources that are available, the pros and cons to that, roughly what the costs are. And if someone is going to do research on a place to live, even a skilled nursing, but especially an assisted living or board and care, just knowing how to get to the places that may be the best and what questions to ask and how to advocate for getting the best care and the best pricing. Unfortunately, the internet is not your friend when you're looking for assisted living, because
why is that?
When you do a search now for assisted living in Oakland, for example, you're just going to get the super optimized sites where they'll send you to these sites.
Top of it probably would be the ads, be number one, and then farther down even the organic listings.
Even the organic listings, you don't really get the places themselves. You get these places that say, fill this form out, and we'll send you the top three places in your area. But first of all, they're not going to tell you about some lower priced options. They're not really going to help with all the emotional transition of the family and the resident. They're not really going to handhold you at all. You might get a couple of phone calls or a visit.
Right.
And these places, I'll just say, these places are Place for Mom and SeniorLiving.net, anything like that. It's really hard to get to the community itself and ask them questions. You can think that you are there, and you're not. And it's frustrating for those of us who are local resources, because they really just they give you minimal assistance. They charge the assisted living place usually 100% of the first month's rent.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a fee that's involved.
There's a fee, and that fee can also apply, a smaller fee can also apply to local people, but we do a lot of handholding.
Yes,
we help with the paperwork, the emotional adjustment for everybody, like I said, and really ensuring that transition, that there aren't balls that get dropped. Because almost always when there's a passing of any type of baton, either from home to skill to assisted living, or from home, hospital, skilled nursing, assisted living, there are a lot of opportunities for things to drop along the way and get confusing, especially as different doctors at the different places get in there and write prescriptions.
Right.
So even just getting clear about, you know, what does this person really need to be.
So there could be a prescription that was prescribed 8 years before. And there's been a drop. But there could be two or three generations of different physicians, maybe because of insurance changes or whatever. Person's still on that medication, and then that person becomes a client of yours.
Well, and then the other doctors are hesitant to take them off a medication, even one that they can acknowledge is typically not good for someone, an elderly person. But they fear writing it in order to discontinue it because they don't know the original justification. So you have this med just stick around. But more common than that even is when someone is hospitalized, the hospital, it's in their interest to keep that person in bed. So their go-to is to have that person as heavily medicated as they can.
I see. So it's sort of this step close to like a medication coma. Like, you know, people are induced coma. If someone's been in like a really bad accident and they're thrashing around, they could hurt themselves. They actually induce a coma. So it's not quite that level.
It's not
but
that.
It's to keep people more flat out, also for various reasons.
Yes, I mean, that definitely would be the extreme example. But there are days when that's what it feels like to me. And I get why they have to do it. But these medications, especially with people with dementia, have a serious backlash.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
So you just want to look and make sure, because, the hospital doctors have prescribed meds. Then if they go to skilled nursing, another doctor is going to get in and play with those meds.
And that's usually the doctor associated with the facility, or it could be their outside doctor as well.
Usually the doctor associated with the facility.
Right.
And unfortunately, not many people really have, less and less people these days really have a strong relationship with a good primary care physician who really knows that person and their history and what's been tried or not tried. And on top of that, a lot of physicians have not specialized in the elderly and geriatric medicine, so they don't fully understand how differently these medications affect the elderly. So you'll sometimes just see them prescribing medications that might work just fine for middle-agers like us, but not for older populations.
And then, so there was another thing that you were talking about earlier, and we were talking over lunch. So, and that's why it might be a little noisy. There's some cars passing by. I just love sitting out on patios because it makes me feel like I'm on vacation in some exotic location. But so there was an example of someone who perhaps in their medical record it says that they're a risk for breaking bones. And so this individual is trying to get up, and then all of a sudden someone comes over and like forces them back down.
Yeah, so this I see all the time, and even when I'm visiting, I spend a lot of time in different skilled nursing and assisted living hospital visiting clients, but even when I'm just visiting, when I see this happen, I very gently, stand by and try to model a different way of being. Someone who is labeled a fall risk is trying to just lift up in their wheelchair. Mm. Now, some people are trying to bolt, and you know that's a different story and
right.
a different picture in terms of intervention. But a lot of times, people just are lifting out, and two or three people will.
And right now, you're pushing down as if you are pushing down on the arms of a wheelchair. You're demonstrating that at this moment.
Right.
Our listening audience can't see that.
So usually when I say to the person, oh, do you want to just lift the pressure off for a minute? Okay, let's stand up together. Tell me when you want to sit back down. Because most people are in a kind of weakened state. They can't do that very long. But just to get
them that
person.
They can't stand up very long.
They can't
yeah.
even lift themselves out of their chair very long. But what they may be trying to tell you is something as simple as, my butt hurts. I've
right.
been sitting for a long time. And as we all know, it's always a battle trying to not have pressure sores for people who are spending a lot of time in their chairs. And this
or
could
in
just
bed
be them,
for long periods of time, yeah.
Doing that very thing, taking the pressure off. And yet the go-to is just to push the person down. And it's a really simple example, but it's a very common example. And just to be taking someone's personal freedom of just even to lift themselves off their butt when it hurts, it's an example of the type of thing I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm,
what
mm-hmm.
is that person trying to communicate, and giving them the opportunity and the time and just the respect to do that simple thing that makes them feel better.
So this is the kind of behavior that you might see in a client of yours or others, and that you've seen over the years and the facilities you worked in and helped mm-hmm. get going and help to train other people and how to observe and try to interpret what is going on with mm-hmm. this person's behavior if they can't actually personally say what they want or need.
Absolutely.
And, so what kind of things do you feel might be helpful for people if they were, like if someone wants to put you out of business because no longer are there any of these problems or no longer is there any dementia or Alzheimer's, that's maybe like a little pipe dream, but what do you think people should be doing now to try to avoid being in those circumstances if at all possible?
Well, the sooner you can start the communication with your parents when they first start having memory loss or even before that,
uh-huh.
try to have conversations about, you know, what is your favorite music? With an eye towards, you know, if what could I put in their life down the road that they can inform me about now? Do they want to be able to watch? I have someone who watches Howdy Doody type.
Oh right, right.
Uh-huh.
50s cartoons,
yeah,
or 50s
something like that.
Reality
that,
TV.
Even though he maybe can't track, it's always been comforting to him to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
It can be music. It can be. It can really be anything that they now would do to relax and feel good in their own skin. It might be being in the garden. It might be sitting outside. Some people will say, well, whatever you do, just make sure I get plenty of time outside. Whereas other people don't like to be outside. They're easily
right.
cold.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So start having those conversations as early as possible. And also some conversations about how do you want us to handle it if you have a stroke and this happens. Some if-then scenarios.
Uh-huh.
Just so that when these things happen and your parent's not able to communicate or other loved one, you're not just having to guess. It's really painful to watch people have to try to guess what their parents would have wanted and
mm-hmm.
really respect what they would have wanted when you don't know and you don't have the information. The other thing would be to find a really good primary care physician. The closer you are, and a lot of parents, I hear from you, adult children, the parents are real resistant to having kids involved. They're worried the kids are going to try to force them into getting rid of their car, moving into assisted living.
And those are all issues of freedom.
They are issues
right?
of freedom. And it's hard to find that balance because there are times when you think, well, I want my parents to make their own decisions. But when decision making is capacity is affected.
Right.
It's also not really responsible to let them suffer the consequences of that without stepping in. Mm-hmm. There is no easy way to do that. I do facilitate those conversations, and sometimes it's easier for an outsider to come in and sort of say, look, here are the options. Here's what can happen if you don't put these systems in place that might make things even worse in the long run and take you away from where you want to be. So if you want to stay in the home, here are some things you could do now that would actually support that being a more likely scenario. Mm. And if it's not, let's put some plan Bs in place for you that would be your next best thing to that, just so that you can be involved in making that decision if at some point it's hard for you to be involved. But it's hard to find that balance, and I won't say it's easy. It's not easy.
Right.
Especially when siblings can often be not in agreement about how to show up for their parents. So have the conversations early, and if you can get your parents to let you have a relationship with a primary care physician, find someone you trust. If you don't know how to trust someone or not trust someone, maybe you know a doctor, or I mean, I certainly have my opinions about the doctors who I feel are really who I would consider the foremost experts in geriatric care around here, those doctors that I work with, and they might be able to refer or at least give you some questions to ask physicians. Mm-hmm. to see how
is that is that something that you have on your website that you could
it is not,
it's not.
I'd rather have a conversation, because it, you know, it's dependent on who you are and where you live, and it could be that you have a good primary care who maybe just isn't informed about certain medications, so you might be able to have a consulting geriatrician consult with your primary care if there's a complicated med need or picture, or if someone has picked up all these different medications at different facilities, to have someone really come in, evaluate that, prescribe and observe, and really tweak that to get to an optimal level. Consult with the primary care for long term.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Carrie, for joining me and my audience, listening audience, in this very, very important topic. And again, let us know what your website is. Again, that's the best way. Perhaps phone numbers change, so website would be the good way.
www.carriemoon.carestrategies.com, and it's KerriMoon. carestrategies.com.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. J.
If you're interested in finding out more about how you or your relatives can avoid dementia, buy the book, Outsmarting the Dementia Epidemic, 7 Key Memory Care Actions to Avoid Alzheimer's and Successfully Keep Your Brain Safe, Sharp, and Sexy into the Future, by going to outsmartingdementia.com. That's outsmartingdementia.com. If you'd like to learn more about how to get an appointment with Dr. Sordian, please call the Redwood Clinic at 510-849-1176. And for information, go to theredwoodclinic.com. Thank you.